This is The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Legal guardianships are supposed to be ways to help those who are most vulnerable, the intellectually disabled or the elderly with dementia, people who have lost the ability to make good decisions for themselves. But for some, a legal guardianship can be a revenue stream, a way to cash in on the system. And as we see the aging of the baby boomer generation, the flaws of the system are becoming more obvious, as is the need for reform. Patrick Michaels is a staff reporter for the Texas Observer, and he wrote the article, Who Guards the Guardians? And Patrick, welcome to The Source.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How big is this issue of guardianship? How many people in Texas have to have guardians?
So the official count is a little bit over 53,000. And that typically includes folks who are either elderly or have a mental disability. What folks are finding, actually, is they audit from the state and go into these courthouses. It's a very fragmented system. They're doing these counts and finding, actually, it's probably a little bit smaller. About 53,000, though, is a good rule of thumb.
Our phone lines are open if you want to join the conversation as we talk about guardianships. If you got a question, maybe we can try to help you, point you in the right direction. If you have, if this is something that's happened in your life, we want to hear your story as well. But Patrick Michaels over at the Texas Observer, and you wrote this lengthy piece really exploring and digging deep into the system, and you're finding that not all 53,000 of these Texans really needed a guardian, and then the person who became the guardian for them didn't really have the best interest at heart for their person that they're supposed to be a steward for.
Yeah, you know, in each of these cases is so fraught. There's so many different, like, delicate family dynamics at play in any one of these cases. So the approach that we took is really to look at the quality of oversight that the state was providing, and what we found in a lot of counties is that judges were basically opening these cases and stuffing them in a file cabinet and then kind of forgetting about them. You know, one of the things that's unique about guardianship, it's not really well known or understood, and it's a strange function for a court that usually, you know, you think of them, you know, you sue somebody, you have a hearing, have the trial, and then that's the end of it once the judge makes a decision. And guardianships are much more of a long-term issue that the state really hasn't been funding, you know, long-term oversight very well. So for years and years, folks live under these things, and they can go very, very wrong.
But you bring to light this private professional guardianship enterprise that is out there. These are professional individuals. They've gotten some sort of a license from the state, and they can become a person's guardian. And they could, you know, do pretty well for themselves financially by doing so.
Yeah, they have a vital role in the system, because a lot of the times people are in guardianships in the first place because the judge has decided that their own family members may be taking advantage of them, or there's a fight within a family and somebody from outside needs to step in to take care of them. To fill that role, what the state has allowed for is a private professional guardianship system where they get certified by the state. They have to, you know, get regular training. But the way that they're paid is out of the estate of the person they're taking care of, because there's no extra funding that the state provides for it except for a small program within the Department of Aging and Disability Services. So for the most part, you know, and this goes for the lawyers as well, but if you're in the guardianship system, you're going to be paying for it yourself.
So is this a growing industry, becoming a professional guardian?
Yeah, absolutely. It's. I would say, I think it was about 10 years ago that the state first required licensing, which sort of led to a buildup of professionalizing that job. And so there are more now than there were back then. And I'd say 10 years before that, it was much smaller. You know, it's still nowhere near the need. I think that if you talk to lawyers who work in guardianship, they'll say that there are a whole lot of people who would benefit from a guardianship who don't have the resources to pay for that. So in a place like Lubbock, which I focus on in the story, there was really only one guardian at a time there, a private guardian to choose from. And so when that was a particularly bad choice, the judges really didn't have much choice but to go with them anyway.
So that maybe if more people enter into this line of work, maybe more people join the profession, then there would be options for judges. But I mean, you write that it's a brief class followed by a 100 question test to become a private guardian. So how brief of a class? What do you mean by that?
Well, the state requires this 100 question test, and they require certain regular upkeep like other licenses. You need to go get continuing professional training. I couldn't tell you exactly how brief the class is, but it's sort of a you go through this to prepare for the test, and there are some private places that'll teach you what you need to know for the test, and then once you pass that, you get your license. And a lot of the oversight is really left up to the local judges in whatever county you're operating in, and they decide basically whether or not they want to give the guardianship to you. And the state provides a very basic level of oversight of do you lose your license or not? Do we fine you for misappropriating some funds, that sort of thing? But the system's set up that the judges really have a whole lot of leeway from county to county.
In your reporting, you drill down on one particular former guardian, professional guardian, and he was able to tap into, the Social Security income of some of these people that he's now the guardian of, receiving, almost the lion's share of what they were receiving.
Yeah, this is, one of the issues with this guy in the story. His name is Eric Watts, and he lost his license a few years ago. But what he was doing was, taking a cut of money that, say, he'd sell the house that a person had lived in that he was taking care of, and the person's in a nursing home now. So he'd sell their house, and then under the law, he's entitled to a certain cut of that, for his work, basically, for his time, because it's his job. And the judges signed off on that, and folks from the state looked at that and said, well, that's actually way too high. Why did the judge go for that? But at that point, it was too late. So there were issues like that of selling off somebody's stock holdings and not really being specific about what was happening with the money. But, in the accounting, it was clear that he had gotten a large chunk of that. And then, to me, some of the most egregious stuff was failure to fulfill, complete the paperwork that people needed to have Medicaid, just to have their Medicaid coverage. People told me basically it was as simple as signing your name, mailing in the form, and he didn't do that, and so people lost their benefits because of that, and he was the guy who was supposed to make sure that that didn't happen.
Well, we're talking about who is guarding the guardians of Texas. We're looking for reforms to their guardianship issues in Texas. Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980. We invite you into the conversation. The Source continues after this quick break. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. More than 53,000 Texans have lost the right to make decisions for themselves. They're under a guardianship. Their legal rights have been transferred to a person of the court's choosing, but who is guarding the guardians? There are stories of abuse, neglect, and outright theft. What's wrong with the system, and how can it be reformed? Also, we're joined by Patrick Michaels, staff reporter for the Texas Observer. He wrote the article covering this issue, and also we bring in Chris Hood of GRADE, Guardianship Reform Advocates, and the Disabled for the Disabled and Elderly. Chris, hi. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I'm going to dig down deeper into your story, Chris, and what you're doing. But I want to get John on the line. He's called in, and he's got some questions. John, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for bringing this topic up. My father has Lewis body disease, which is a identifiable disease. It's a combination of Parkinsonian symptoms and also dementia. And he is exactly the type of person that would benefit from a guardianship. We already have powers of attorney signed, posted at the courthouse. We have a financial planning team that helps to oversee the financial side of things. But we do need a guardianship. And what we have been told by multiple lawyers here in Bexar County is that in the current climate, with the way the system is, it is not desirable to pursue a guardianship until something catastrophic happens, meaning that he has caused harm to himself, to other people, or that there is an acute emergency that requires a court order to intervene. And in my opinion, that is complete insanity, because in his condition, it's only let to go on his own, it would only be a matter of time before he would do one of those things, and then it's too late to prevent the injury, both to him, innocent people, or potentially his estate.
All right, John.
Can I say something?
Yes, Chris.
Those lawyers are absolutely right. If you have a power of attorney for both the financial and the health side, that's called an alternative to guardianship, where you and your family get to decide what to do.
Well, excuse me, if I could just respond to that. We've taken him to the hospital, and there are certain hospitals in the city that will not recognize a power of attorney as something to override what that individual's stating at that moment in an emergency room.
Well, and they're not following the law then.
There was a new law passed.
Okay, hang on. Let's go one at a time. And so, John, go ahead. John?
I'm just saying he has been transported at the recommendation of appropriate medical personnel to emergency rooms in this city, and standing there with me with a physical power of attorney in my hand, they are not willing to go against the wishes of the individual for what they are presenting with if they decide that he is not incapacitated as he is presenting in that emergency room. That is an experience I have had. I will gladly send you the medical file on it and just to magically hand wave and say there's these alternative solutions that fix everything and somebody else, oh, well, they're breaking the law. That doesn't change the emergency in the moment
right.
that a court order would prevent.
Okay. All right. John, thank you for the call. We'll get some reaction from Chris Hood from Grade. And so, Chris, you're seeing John's dilemma there.
I see his perceived dilemma. And the truth is, if he's going to hire a lawyer, he should hire a lawyer to sue those hospitals, because the way the law is written in Texas now, they're not following the law. The hospitals are not following the law. As of the last session, Senator Zaffirini and Representative Smithy got two bills passed, one alternatives to guardianship and two the Bill of Rights of the Ward, and they're still being taught and distributed across the state. It first went to the lawyers, then it went to other people, and apparently they haven't gotten to the hospitals yet. But alternatives to guardianship, a POA where the court is not involved, needs to be honored by everyone. And that is the law in Texas now.
So, Chris Hood, with your organization, Guardianship Reform Advocates for the Disabled and Elderly, I mean, you do see a need for guardianships, correct?
Yes. I'm not saying that there are people out there that don't need guardians. There's a couple things. If we can move away from John just for a moment, we'll come back to him, but I want to do an overview.
Sure.
Of the situation first, if that's okay?
Yes.
All right. I was actually at the hearing where the woman who lost her license, her case was presented. And he needs to go back and do a follow-up, because the mother of that woman and the mother-in-law of that woman is a guardian, and I wonder how many of those cases were transferred to another family member and that they're still profiting.
Second, I could jump in just briefly.
Okay. Yeah, Patrick Michaels from the Texas Observer. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, just that, I mean, I mentioned Eric Watts, and his wife ended up taking a bunch of his cases after he lost his license. She lost her license. And they both have, the family tradition of, I think one was a licensed guardian, maybe both of them. I think one still is, but in a neighboring county. So from what I've heard in Lubbock and the counties right around there, there are actually two new guardians who aren't family associates of those folks who've stepped in to take a lot of those cases. So from what I've heard anyway, their cases didn't end up, staying within the family at least.
That's great. I'm very pleased to hear that.
Yeah.
The second thing about the JBCC, The board members, the actual people that sit on the board, I think are honorable and trying to do their best for the wards of Texas. However, the advisory board that actually investigates the case is flawed. The reason being, a lot of there's several reasons, but one is a lot of medical issues come up. Is this person competent? What level of care do they need? What level of medication do they need? And they don't have a single doctor on there. And second, when complaints come in, the board is packed with not retired but current probate judges, visiting judges, and attorneys who represent guardianship. So even if, and I believe it is, but even if there is a conflict of interest, there's a perceived conflict of interest, and very few, I mean, you have to be outrageously egregious to be penalized by the board. And there needs to be a doctor on the board. There needs to be retired probate judges, and I know several that would be willing to serve. And there needs to be a citizen advocate, someone who's not just looking at how can we save the guardians, but how we can save the wards.
Our phone lines are open. We're talking about guardianships in Texas, some of the flaws in the system and reforms that are being called for. Call in if you got a question or a comment, if you've been through this situation, 210-614-8980. And Patrick Michaels, you wrote this article for the Texas Observer, Who Guards the Guardians? And you point out some of the flaws, particularly of people who are becoming these private professional guardianship guardians, and that there's a lack of oversight, particularly because they have to be handled by judges, and it looks like these judges are overwhelmed, and that they're not equipped really to be on top of each and every one of these cases.
That's for sure, and that goes for the family members as well, not just the private professional folks, but and in fact, most of the guardianships in the state by far are within the family. But the reporting requirements are the same. Every year you have to, file a report with the court that says, hey, I'm taking care of this person. Here's how they're doing. Here's a picture of them. Here's what they like to do. Here's an accounting of their money, and here's how I've spent it. Everybody has to do that. And I focused on smaller counties. So Bexar County, for instance, has its own system that Chris knows very well, that it's got its own problems and issues. But in the smaller counties, judges just get these things piled up and don't have many, if any, resources to help them get through them to keep up with what's going on. So, if the things get filed, nobody's looking at them. If they don't get filed, nobody stops them. And so it's just sort of an unknown, just how.
Well, there's actually a solution in the works for the oversight. The JBCC is working on getting a computer program that, and the lawmakers are working on getting a law to go with it that would require that every ward in the state be registered through the JBCC, and their paperwork, as it comes in and is filed with the county clerks in whatever county they're in, it would be forwarded to this computer program, and if the paperwork's not filed, the computer program would spit out a notice that telling the judges they need to get the paperwork in.
And it's a super promising first step.
It's in Oregon, and they're working on that solution.
Okay, Patrick.
Yeah, we cover them in the story, actually. I visited with a judge in Seguin, who's had them auditing his cases, and he totally invited them in. He's a new judge and found this pile of cases that he knew he needed help to deal with. And so there's this new software that's been used for guardianship-type cases in Minnesota that they're piloting in Texas. And I think the next legislature, they're going to try and get more money to expand that program.
So, Patrick, we heard from John earlier talking about how difficult it was for him to get guardianship over his parent who's having health issues, but you tell a story in your of people, this happening to people getting guardianships all the time. Why is it so easy for one person and difficult for another?
Yeah, I mean, Chris is absolutely right that it's the law says the guardianship, it's such an extreme solution that it should be the sort of the last resort. And there are new alternatives now in cases that are less extreme.
So like partial guardianship or supported decision-making type processes.
Yeah. But in, you know, so the cases that I wrote about precede that law. And in the case that I lead with, a woman in Dallas, her sons basically got advice from a lawyer they knew in Lubbock who said, guardianship is what you need. Here's how we can do it. And there wasn't an alternative there at that point. And so basically her rights were all kind of swept up in this guardianship. And even her family, who wasn't necessarily sure years later that she still needed this thing, felt to some extent trapped by the system that brought themselves into.
But it seems like there is money in the system, and once you're in, you're able to tap into that as a revenue stream, as we saw with some of the cases that you document. So, Patrick, are these reforms removing that part of the equation?
Partly. I mean, I think for the huge one is the partial guardianships. You know, the alternatives to guardianship, they're guardianship light that don't require as much legal filing and time in front of the judge. And, you know, those legal fees really add up. The woman I mentioned in Dallas, I think she spent upwards of $100,000 paying her lawyers and her son's lawyers through the course of this thing while she was trying to get out from under it.
Right.
So it's just very easy to end up spending a whole lot of money once you're in the probate court system.
The article is online at thetexasobserver.org. And I want to thank Patrick Michaels and also Chris Hood of Grade Guardianship Reform Advocates for the Disabled and Elderly. This is The Source on KSTX.